modern day life can be hard to navigate, but even a simple homestead life can be, well, not so simple. Welcome to the Choosing Simple podcast. My name is Amy Fuel, and I am a homesteading mama, author, wife, entrepreneur, and homesteader. And in this podcast, we talk about embracing raw emotions and real life in moments of motherhood, womanhood, and just simple down-home homesteading lifestyle. Simplicity doesn't just happen. It's a choice we have to make every single day. So whether you're a tired mama washing dishes at 11 p.m. or a woman gardener battling the worst squash bugs you've ever had, this podcast is for you. Let's talk about real life. Let's talk about choosing simple. Let's get started with this week's episode. Hey guys, thank you for joining me once again on this episode of the Choosing Simple podcast. In full transparency, I want to let you know that it is about 11 p.m. on a Thursday evening at the recording of this podcast because my week has been incredibly challenging. And I have been sitting here, I really have been wanting to do a podcast episode, and life has been crazy. And I keep trying to figure out which, you know, I have this running list of podcast topics that I'm just kind of whittling my way through. And I've been wondering what episode should I record next? And this whole entire week, the same topic came up over and over and over and over again. And so I thought, okay, God, I think that this is the topic that you want me to talk about. And so I have tried on more than one occasion this week to really sit down and record this podcast episode. And this just happens to be the time that I'm doing it. And how fitting, because this week we are talking about essentially being a Christian wife and a Christian mother and the expectations of such. And more so an emphasis on how we really get here in Westernized culture, we really get the Proverbs 31 woman wrong. Now, I have touched on this throughout various different episodes. You have to forgive me if I fall over my words. I have no coffee with me and I'm very tired. But I've kind of talked about this on various different episodes, but I don't think that I've ever actually done an episode about this topic specifically. And so a few women have been talking to me recently about this topic, and I thought, you know what, I just need to go ahead and do it. So that's what we're going to do. And we're titling this podcast, How Westernized Civilization Gets the Proverbs 31 Woman Wrong, because we do. Let me give you a little bit of a background. I grew up in a Christian home. I grew up Baptist until I was about 10, and then we started going to a non-denominational church. But that really is neither here nor there, because both of them had very similar mindsets. The individual churches in general, I'm not necessarily saying the denominations. I grew up, I was never really told that, you know, women should be super submissive and do, you know, when your husband says jump, you say how high. No, you know, I was never taught that. I came out of a household where, you know, my dad did, you know, he would pitch in and do dishes. He would do laundry. To this day, my dad will still do dishes and laundry. And, but, you know, we came out of a different household. However, I was surrounded by many families and many people who taught their children that submission in marriage meant essentially oppression in marriage. And in fact, even well into adulthood, you know, I have heard things like, well, you know, submissive wives, they might feel oppressed, but that is the weight of sin, and we should understand that that's a lie, that oppression isn't what we should feel, even though that's how our husbands make us feel. And I'm like, whoa, whoa. Hold on there. Wait a second. Why are you feeling oppressed? And, you know, that never really made much sense to me until I realized that I had to have my own experience in marriage of that. And I'm not saying that I felt oppressed, but we'll get there in a second. So I grew up under what most of westernized civilization, we call AKA America, old-fashioned wifely duties. You know, women were supposed to be very gentle and quietly spoken, and they worked around the house all day. The house was spick and span. They took care of the kids. They welcomed their husband home, you know, after a hard day's work, and they gave him a kiss and they looked all nice and pretty. And those are all wonderful things. Wonderful things. Okay. But they're not always realistic things. And so it's not necessarily the Bible that teaches that. In fact, it doesn't at all. America teaches that. The American church teaches that. And it's false. And oftentimes, the backup for it is they'll go through the Proverbs 31 woman and say, well, the Bible says this in Proverbs. And I'm like, well, I don't see that in Proverbs at all. At all. I don't see that in Proverbs. I want to read through these 31 verses with you real quick in Proverbs. They're not very long. And then we're going to break down Proverbs 31, but we're also going to talk about some other pretty amazing women in the Bible. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Jewish culture back in biblical days. And so I'm going to try to not make this podcast extremely long, but just know that it could go a little longer than normal. So let's read through Proverbs 31. I'm actually going to start with verse 10. And I am reading out of the NIV version. And so, of course, this is the sayings of King Lemuel or Lemuel. And so he says in verse 10, he starts, "A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still night, and she provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he finds his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity, and she can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honor her for all that her hands have done, and let her words bring her praise at the city gate." What an amazing woman, right? Did you hear at all in there that her husband had his thumb on her the whole time? In fact, the Proverbs 31 woman had so much freedom. I'm going to show you where, exactly where. In Proverbs 31, verse 11, it says, "Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value." And so we are looking at a woman who is married to a man who has confidence in her ability, who has confidence in her ability to get her job done, whether it is within the home or outside of the home, and lacks nothing. He is supportive. He values her. Likewise, in verse 12, we find that she is very much the same with him. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. That's what it says. So here we see the very first few verses that they are such an amazing team. This wife of noble character isn't just about the wife, it's about the husband as well. He has full confidence in her and her ability and her voice and her needs and her passions. and likewise she brings him good and not any harm. And so these two verses really set the stage of the Proverbs 31 woman, because it sets the stage of what her job is. And her job is ultimately everything that she does points back to her family, points back to her household, and is for her family, her household, and God. There's really no set rules on what she does and how she does it, as long as her family is taken care of, and as long as all the things that she does points back to him and points back to her family. So then we start with her day. In verse 15, we see that she gets up while it's still nighttime, while it's still dark. She provides and makes food for her family and portions for her female servants. Now, a lot of women nowadays will say, well, the Proverbs 31 woman had servants. And I will tell you that, woman, you also have servants. You have a laundry machine. You have a dishwasher. Many of you, I don't have a dishwasher, but a vacuum. You know, we have modern amenities that Jewish women did not have back in the day. And so let's kind of nip that one in the bud right now. But then perhaps one of my favorite verses in all of Proverbs 31 is where it, verse 16, it says, she considers a field and buys it out of her earnings. She plants a vineyard. Some versions of the Bible say out of her own money, she plants a vineyard. Out of her own money, she considers a field and buys it. Now, why do we always skip over this part? In fact, I feel like this part is one of the most important parts of Proverbs 31. We see that the Proverbs 31 woman not only took care of her household, took care of her children, provided for her family in those ways, but the Proverbs 31 woman was also an entrepreneur. She was an investor. She invested in land. She saw that the field was good. She bought it. It didn't say she ran back home to her husband and asked him if she could. It said she bought it. Of course, we see that they work together. And so obviously they have a very good working relationship. But remember, we started this with her husband has full confidence in her. And I'm going to kind of wrap all this together in my personal experience right after we go through this. And so if she's making conscious and wise choices, which we know that she does, because in verse 26 it says she speaks with wisdom. And if she speaks with wisdom, that must mean that she makes wise choices as well. Then it's a no-brainer that the Proverbs 31 woman not only worked inside the home, but she worked outside of the home. Verse 18 says she sees that her trading is profitable. So not only was she an entrepreneur, but she also traded, and her trading was profitable. And then we go through the various different things. Her household is clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. Then we go into the homemaker type things. In verse 25, we see that she is clothed with strength and dignity. The Proverbs woman could have certainly been dainty and quiet in many ways. And in fact, in Titus, women are instructed to have a gentle and quiet spirit. But that doesn't mean that they can't also be outspoken and speak up and be strong and courageous. And so without trudging on through Proverbs more, I want to get into Jewish tradition real quick. And so in Jewish tradition, especially in Bible days, women were really kind of, they had no rights in a lot of ways. Women could not technically buy land on their own. They couldn't, I mean, you have to think even in America, even in the 40s, which wasn't that long ago, a woman could not purchase a property, or she could not get a loan, or she could not even start her own business if her husband or her father didn't co-sign with her. Okay, it wasn't that long ago. I want to read something to you in Galatians 3. It's Galatians 3, and we're going to start in verse 26, and it says, "So in Christ Jesus, you are all children of God through faith. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ." Verse 28, There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female. You are all one in Christ Jesus. If you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. We are looking at this from an economic standpoint. You could certainly take it figuratively, all right? There's no nor Jew nor Gentile, nor slave nor free, nor male nor female. You could take it literally. But he was specifically speaking on an economic front, that we shouldn't think of ourselves more highly than another in every possible way, okay? And so I want to kind of put that verse out there, because now I want to go through some women in the Bible that really you probably have heard of, but you may not know much about, all right? The first woman is probably a woman that most of us know, and her name was Deborah. So after Joshua's conquest on Canaan, the Lord raised up judges. You'll see that in Judges 2:16. And one of them was Deborah. Of course, she was a woman. Now, Deborah was a prophet. And suddenly there's gasps. What? We have women prophets in the Bible? Yes, absolutely we do. And I'll show you that in Judges 4:4. It says, now Deborah, a prophet, the wife of Lappidoth, was leading Israel at the time. So not only was she a prophet, but she was also married. Now, in America, sometimes we see this happen, and husbands of women in leadership get very, very jealous. I don't know that Lappidoth was very jealous. He might have even been scared of Deborah, for all we know. I joke, kind of. She was a very strong woman. She wasn't just a judge. She was the leader of their military. She was leading an entire nation. Stone her. Tell her she's not worthy. Tell her she'll be deceived and rebuke that evil Jezebel. Because that's what we would say in America if a Deborah rose up in the midst of us. She's a woman. She doesn't have a place here. Well, you know, we still say that. A lot of churches still say that. And it always goes back to the Jezebel thing, which if you don't know who Jezebel was, she was an evil ruler. And she died in a very horrible way because she was essentially an abomination to God. But let's talk about Deborah, not Jezebel. So a commander from neighboring Canaan had been oppressing the Israelites for quite some time. So the Lord commanded Deborah to take her army and kill Sisera, who was the commander of the Canaan army. So Deborah prophesied that Sisera would be delivered unto and killed by a woman. And she was exactly right. So in Judges 4:21, it says, but Jael, Heber's wife, picked up a tent peg and a hammer and went quietly to him while he lay fast asleep. He being Sisera, he was exhausted. She drove the peg through his temple into the ground and he died. I'm pretty glad he died, because that would have been a horrible death if he had not died right away. So not only was Deborah a prophet, she knew that he was going to die. But we see Jael, who killed him. A woman killed him. Okay? Deborah was a ruler. She was a leader. She was militaristic. But she was also religious and political as well. The people of Israel enjoyed 40 years of peace because of Deborah's servanthood as a judge. I would hate for our corrupted view of women in the American church to deter a young woman from rising up and liberating an entire country. Let that sink in. Let me say that one more time. I would hate for our corrupted view of women in the American church today to deter a young woman from rising up and liberating an entire country. Let's move on to the next woman in the Bible, and we're going to briefly touch on her. Her name is Miriam. You may know her most by being the sister of Moses. She actually was the one who took Moses and followed him through the water, and as he was delivered unto Pharaoh's daughter. And of course, Moses' mother, her name was Jochebed, and she was able to raise him still through the blessing and graciousness of God. But you can read that story for for another day. We won't go through that one. But Miriam, she was also not a quiet, sit-down, shut-up kind of gal. In fact, Miriam sang loudly and danced vibrantly in Exodus 15 as she led people with Moses out of the Red Sea. She was not just a poet and a singer and a dancer. She was also a prophetess. And we see that throughout the Bible. Now, Miriam got sidetracked, and we're not going to go through all of Miriam's story, but I wanted to mention her because she was worth mentioning. She did want to lead, and that wasn't God's plan for her life, to be a ruler. I'm going to say a ruler, not necessarily a leader. And so we do see that kind of working its way out, but she is worth mentioning because of the way that she danced and sang and praised the Lord, taking those people through the Red Sea. Next, I want to talk about beautiful Queen Esther. Now, we just celebrated Purim, and that is one of the various different feasts that you can have in the Jewish culture. Queen Esther was an amazing woman, and essentially, long story short, she was Jewish, and unbeknownst to the king was looking for a new wife. He chose Esther because she was beautiful, not knowing that she was Jewish. The king's high official did not like her family, Mordecai. He did not like the Jewish people, and so therefore, he essentially tried to convince the king to, as most people wanted, to kill Jews and do bad things. And so Esther was really put into place to deliver her people. And we see that in Esther 4:14, where Mordecai is speaking to her. And he says, "For if you remain silent at this time," because remember that Esther had this turmoil inside of her. Like, what do I do? What do I say? What if something bad comes of this and I die, Mordecai says, "For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place." So essentially saying, if you don't do it, someone else will. "But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." That was Esther 4:14. Now, Esther, her characteristics, she was very strong and courageous, but she was also very gentle and quiet-spirited, and that caused the king to trust her and listen to her. So we've gone through with Deborah, where Deborah was very strong and just courageous and brave and such a big leader, and then we go into this Queen Esther type of leader who was also strong and brave, but one of her greatest character traits was that she was calm and she was quiet-spirited. And that's what won the king over, to trust her and essentially love her and listen to her pleas. Now, the story of Esther essentially takes over, we kind of looks like it only takes a few days, but it really lasted over the course of 10 years. And I think it's really important because we can see the differences in women and how God wanted to use each woman and how each woman had a different gift and a different personality and a different lifestyle, but ultimately their goals were the same. Their goals were family and their goals were God, right? Finally, I want to touch on another woman that you may not really know in the Bible who I think is very, very important. And her name is Huldah. Okay, now listen, I've read the Bible and I really don't remember Huldah. When I first started doing research, and maybe because I just, it didn't really stick with me, but Huldah is an extremely important influence on us even today. Because Huldah not only interpreted the Torah, but also authorized it. So the very core of Jewish and Christian scripture was interpreted by a woman. Can you believe that? Let that sink in for just a second. Huldah's prophetic message, she was a prophetess, and the public reading of the law brought about a revival, resulting in the reforms carried out by King Josiah. There's not much about Huldah in the Bible, but the little we know about her is fascinating and extremely important. Huldah was sought out after because of her knowledge and her ability to talk to people. Women and men sought after her at the city gates. Huldah is one of the women in the Bible that me personally, I feel the most connected to. She had a way with words. She loved teaching. She loved God. She loved prophesying. She loved reading. She loved researching. She loved all of the things that I love. And so when I started reading about Huldah, it really resonated with me. You know, the one thing, though, that resonates most with me about these women is that not only were they chosen, I mean, we have other women that are influences in the Bible, like Elizabeth and Rachel and Hannah, Mary, Isaiah's wife, Anna, all of these people, they were prophets and leaders and even just simple folk who had a real purpose. They loved the Lord and they used all of their character traits and their prophets and whatever they did for their family and for the Lord, but they were willing to be used. Not only that, though, most of these women had husbands who encouraged them to be used by the Lord, who took heed to the things that the Lord told these women. They didn't brush them off simply because they were women. I think that's really important, okay? So let me go through my personal experience with you. And after I've told you all of this, this is all research that I did because this was years ago that I did it, because I myself struggled with it. So you know the beginning of my story of where, you know, I came from a family that wasn't necessarily that way. My father was definitely a leader in our family. And my mother was certainly submissive. But my father was never the type who would say, no, you can't do that, you know? Well, my husband grew up quite differently. A lot of his family grew up old time Pentecostal. And a lot of them, and I'm not saying every side of his family, just certain portions of them, you know, and a lot of times in old-time Pentecostal churches, that's how you're brought up. Even old-time Baptist churches can be this way. Various different denominations and even non-denominational ones, but mostly it stems from an old culture and Christianity where we take scriptures kind of out of context. Women, we teach that women are supposed to be quiet in church, right? They shouldn't really say anything. They should never challenge a man and challenge a man's teaching or anything like that. You know, it was funny because we were in Sunday school this past Sunday and the Sunday school teacher, you know, he's teaching from the Bible and he said, well, how do you know what I'm teaching you is true? And we all just kind of looked at him. He goes, well, if it's not true, you should tell me. And I'm thinking, but in some churches, if it's a woman who wants to challenge you because she knows the word better than you, like Huldah, it would be looked down upon, right? But anyhow, so when I first got married, I was young, I was 18, and in my mind, I don't know why, I was never taught this, But maybe because my husband was, or he assumed it, I thought I was supposed to be the stay-at-home wife who was barefoot, having babies, kept the house floor, you know, lickable, and all of those things. And I should have a pristine home and you know, whatever, to each their own. And I should do nothing but praise my husband and make sure he has dinner on the table every night and know my place, essentially, is what I thought. You know, no one really told me I should feel that way, but that's for some reason what I thought. Unfortunately, a lot of it stemmed from blogs. You know, I was a brand new wife. A couple years later, I was a brand new mom. And a lot of women were teaching, I mean, big named women, that in marriage, you were supposed to be quiet. You weren't supposed to question your husband. You weren't supposed to tell him he was wrong. You weren't supposed to want to work outside of the home. Those were things you weren't supposed to want. So ultimately, our goal when we got married was to have me eventually become a stay-at-home mother. And that happened for us we worked very hard towards that. And that's another story for another day. I can link a YouTube video in this description of the podcast where you can go to kind of figure out how we became work-at-home, self-employed people. But anyhow, we had reached a level in 2016 where I no longer had to work at all, period. And I completely quit my job in August of 2016. It might have actually been the end of July in 2016. And during those few weeks, right after I quit, I felt so dissatisfied. I was so bored. And I just thought, this is not how I should feel. And then I felt guilty. I felt guilty that I felt this way. Like, you shouldn't want to work, because that's what all these big time mom and Christian wife bloggers had told me. Well, you shouldn't want to work because your work at home is good enough, right? And it is. It really is. It is good enough. But that's not quite true for every woman. And so a month later, I started a brand new business because I really felt that it was God inspired. And now I'm learning even more so 5 years later that it definitely was. But I felt guilt and I had opposition from every direction. Every direction I had it. But it all changed when I started looking at this stuff. I started looking at the Proverbs woman. You know, I realized that I was looking for truth everywhere except for where I should be looking for it. And if you want truth in Christianity, you have to go to the Bible. The Bible will show you what truth is. And so in this podcast, I've laid out truth for you. The Proverbs 31 woman didn't sit idle. In fact, in one of those verses, it said that she did not eat the bread of idleness. There's only so many times you can clean your house during the day. There's only so many. Well, certainly, I mean, I'm so disorganized that I could probably work on my house all day long. But I just didn't feel like that was me. So I made wise business decisions when I realized that, you know what, the Proverbs woman worked outside of the home, but she worked only for a temporary time outside of the home. It all got brought back home for the purpose of home. And so I started mirroring my businesses after the Proverbs 31 woman, where you get up and you take care of your family. You take care of your household. You get your household in order. And then when all of that is done, then my work began. The work that brings in a substantial income for my family now. The work that I'm passionate about. this podcast is included. The work that God called me to do. And I've got to tell you, I can't tell you how many times I have been told that I am wrong because I am a woman. Just recently, on the Homesteaders of America Facebook page, and that's, if you guys don't know, that's one of the businesses that I own. We have tens of thousands of followers. I had a guy publicly comment on one of our posts saying, "Well, I'm unfollowing you because you're a woman, and what would you know? I need to learn from men that are actually doing this." And I just sat there and I thought to myself, because I'm a woman, and I am a woman, I am proud to be a woman. I love being a woman. But because I'm a woman, you can't learn from me? Like, what ego that is, what pride that is. It's not my fault that I'm a woman and you don't want to listen to me. It's your fault that you're an arrogant man who doesn't know the value of both genders. So it's still there, and it's especially there in Christianity. But as I learned, eventually all that guilt went away throughout my journey of getting to this point of being confident as a wife and a mother and an entrepreneur in the plan that God has for me. I still get judged a lot by moms who don't have a job outside of housewife and mama. And let me just tell you, those two jobs are exhausting in and of themselves. They are, and they are enough. You don't have to have a job other than that. You really don't. But ladies, can I encourage you to not discourage a woman from passionately following what she truly believes is right for her and right for her family, again, through that lens that it's always pointing back to being profitable or good for her family. We never want to encourage women to do things that are not good for their family, of course, but never discourage them from the things that they want to do if their family is still well taken care of and they especially feel passionate and God inspired by it. We continue to, I would venture to say that it's more women than men that have an issue with women working outside of the home. I'm not saying that these women are actively going to work and just not taking care of their children. Those are not the situations I'm talking about. But these are women who love staying busy, who get up in the morning, get their kids done, homeschool, work during nap time, and they might stay up until midnight every night, or they might get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do their jobs, to do their business at home. Don't judge them. They have a place too. There's no right or wrong. We can see that with Deborah. We can see that with Esther. We can see that with Huldah. Each woman had a different character trait, a different passion, and a different way that God used her. You know, we could even bring up other women in the Bible that you would know by name, like Mary and Sarah and Hannah, who certainly gave birth to amazing men, but they didn't do extraordinary things outside of that. They were just housewives and moms, and that's an extraordinary thing. If that's what you are, then that's an extraordinary thing. But a woman who is even more than that, or who has decided to take on work or do a job while her kids are napping or while her family is asleep, is equally as important and just has a different calling on her life than you may. That does not mean that she does not love her family, or that she does not want to be near her kids, or that she values work over home life. And in fact, it probably normally means that she values home life so much that she wants to contribute to it. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to work. I love staying busy. I love working, especially if it's something I'm passionate about. But we've also had our share number of health scares. And I realized, you know, the Proverbs 31 woman, everything she did was profitable. And it said in Proverbs 31, it said that her household never feared because everything was taken care of. What if my husband hurts himself and I'm only relying on his income? We had that scare. We had a medical scare with him a couple of years ago. And of course, it was a wrong medical scare. They misdiagnosed him. But with the original diagnosis, he would have been out of commission for months with the surgery he would have had to have. And we're talking like not just a back surgery or a knee surgery. We're talking about an organ surgery. You know, he would have been out of commission for months. And if I had had no income, can you imagine? Can you imagine the stress that not only I would have felt, but that he would have felt? And from that moment, that was the moment where I said, we will never, ever, this will never happen. And so every work that I've done in the last few years, it goes into savings. Because if there comes a time where, heaven forbid, he get hurt or have a health issue, or heaven forbid, and I pray not anytime soon, he die, that responsibility is then mine to take care of my family. And I would much rather prepare for it now then have it happen 10 years from now and not be prepared for it. Because can you imagine how much more stress? That's the one thing I always thought about. How difficult that would be. I have a lot of women friends that do odd and end jobs just to put aside into savings, or just to help their husband meet goals that they have, whether it's making extra house payments or buying their first house or expanding their property or even just putting aside for retirement. And I feel like there is good and honest and holiness in that. And even if you aren't doing that, that's fine too. There's no judgment. But we have to stop judging and criticizing women and using Proverbs 31 as a means to criticize women and wrongly try to subject them to what you think or a church thinks a woman is supposed to be or do or say or think. And I think it's high time in America that we have that freedom. Because there was so much freedom in Proverbs 31. And I hope that in this podcast, you learned exactly that. All right, guys, thank you for joining me for this week's podcast episode. It did go long, and I knew it was going to be a long one, but I hope that it was worth your time. I hope that if you are a woman who is passionate about doing good and honest work, that this encourages you to keep doing it. I hope that if you are a woman who says, I still don't want to work. I want to be at home with my babies all day long. I just want to do housewife stuff. That it encourages you that is also really amazing and good work. And that you would keep doing it with a grateful heart. But at no time should you ever feel oppression. If it's going right and it's working biblically, There should never be any kind of oppression. But that also depends on you too. It's always good to reevaluate our heart as women to make sure that the things that we are doing are godly and they are truthful and they are going along with God's word, that our families are taken care of first, our husbands are never harmed by us in word or deed or thought, and then that we pursue the passions of our heart and the passions of Christ. Until next time, I hope that you guys enjoyed this podcast. I hope to see you on the next one. And don't forget to choose simple.